And welcome to Muddy River News This Week, furnished by Harvey's. I'm Bob Goff. The housing situation is something that certainly got a lot of discussion in 2022, and we're going to talk about that a little more today with the Vice Chairman of the Adams County Board, Brett Austin. Welcome.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, so you, in your role as Vice Chairman, and you were also working with the ARPA money and bringing in the COVID money and all that, and one of the things that COVID, they said they could use it for was to alleviate housing and take housing issues and concerns. Mm-hmm. So you and the county voted to set aside $1 million for housing. How will that money be implemented, or is that why you have to have the studies to see how the money needs to be implemented?
Yeah, so early on we were talking about a program maybe very similar to the small rental rehab program that the city of Quincy is doing, which I think is a great program and hopefully is going to be very successful. They put about $1 million behind that themselves. But what came up over the course of this was that we were looking at there's some other issues going on with housing. There's also different types of housing that are becoming more, I don't want to maybe not use the word trendy, but you know what I mean, they're becoming more desired, especially younger generations where not as much yard upkeep, not as big of a lot, things like that, townhomes, condos, things of that nature. Specifically, the ARPA money that we wanted to set aside is to be used for alleviating housing shortages. Sometimes that can be seen as low-income housing. We view it probably more right now as just affordable housing, which is a phrase that gets kind of interpreted differently in a lot of different ways. But affordable housing really just means, you know, something that a person at different levels of income coming into housing can afford and to do. And by all measures, nationwide, statewide, and here in Adams County and City of Quincy, we have a housing shortage on a lot of levels. And that's something that we're going to have to dive into. So right now, this is just to see what the housing study provides and then come back to this, because we had used ARPA money for a lot of other projects already.
Right.
And so we needed to make sure that we had some space allowed for this important project. We maybe should have allocated in a different order and done this very much up front and maybe even got this housing study done sooner rather than later. But you know, we knew there was a possibility of a grant coming, so we wanted to wait for that.
And the grant that is coming from the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity that Grediff applied for, they're going to be the ones that are going to facilitate it. You put some money in, the city finally put some money in.
Yes.
So you will then, that study will then go out. What, I mean, again, you don't know, you have the study because you don't know what you don't know, but in your, with your experience in being a, you know, a landlord for many years and property owner, what do you envision this study doing?
Well, I think it's going to point out that there's a housing shortage across the board. We probably didn't need to do a study for that. That's in every newspaper, every magazine. I think in the every news website that's out there. And but when you start to drill deeper in on that, you could, you know, leap into some things and kind of make some mistakes in that area if you thought it was you know, a housing shortage in just one sector, or if you tried to put all your money in just low income, or if you put all your money in just single family homes. So if you're asking me, you know, kind of from my crystal ball a little bit, I would say that Quincy is got a significant amount of low income housing units, but they're constantly full. That is kind of one sector that deals with maybe a little bit different money, different aspect of like how those allotments come and how you get a you know, a Section 8 certificate, some things like that. I think those existing programs are working well and do move those units through, although I'm sure there's some shortage there as well. And I think at the high end where we see $350,000 and up houses in Quincy, we see a lot of people moving around between those houses, but we're not necessarily, you know, speaking from a real estate standpoint, the demand for like a whole new subdivision of those houses, I don't know if Quincy would really accommodate that. So I think we're going to find it's in the middle band somewhere, and it's going to be rental units that are well maintained. You know, rent has definitely jumped up, and that's part of this housing shortage as well as inflation in general. But and also just entry-level housing that's new. Quincy has almost no new entry-level housing, and our average median home prices around $160,000 in Quincy. And so if you tried to find something like that right now, it's like a unicorn out there. You know, it's just not there.
While we have, you know, talked and heard that a lot of folks have decided they're going to move to Missouri from Illinois or what have you, we still have had an influx of people coming in. You know, the Quincy Calling Program, they were talking about that at the Gretf meeting last week where people were coming in. And you're right, because I've had friends who have also moved back here, and to find anything in that family of four, yard for the kids, parents have good jobs, but they're not doctors or what have you. Hey, I'd really like something in that 160 to 200 range. That's what you're saying, just really ain't there.
That one doesn't exist. And I would say that good quality two and three bedroom apartments are definitely hard to find as well. I mean, speaking from my own experience, we have a waiting list a mile long. It's not to be self-serving about housing. I mean, the housing market has been strong for a long time, and I'm not coming at this from a politician trying to get into my own market kind of thing. This has been obvious to people in real estate and housing probably for a decade, and I think now it has a lag sometimes of what people see when they move around. And if we have any chance of growing economically in this area, we're going to have to put some time and effort and some money into this problem to solve it, because it is the root of everything that follows after, right? Security and where you live is the literally and figuratively the foundation of everything else that moves after it, with a close second being job security and school levels. And, you know, those are always played about in that mix of doing what you want to find for housing.
So when... you know, we have a lot of great builders and in this town who've put together subdivisions and you know, nice houses and things like that. This is not a case of, I mean, is this a thing where they can be worked with, where you say, look, this study tells us we need these houses? I know you guys make more money when you build this, you know, a $350,000, $400,000 house, but boy, we've got this patch of land out on the east side of town. We could really use a dozen $180,000 houses. Is it a chance where you try to incentivize them to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I know there's a wide range of opinions on that, you know, and I'm certainly in the middle somewhere on that spectrum of, like, how many times do you want to put your hands on the control with government, right? The free market system works, it works well, but in essence, there are times when there's either a lack of supply or more demand than you've got or whatever. And we're in that situation. We've been in that situation for a while, but it's just becoming so apparent now. And I think, you know, when you look around at what other larger urban communities are doing, now you're starting to see that come down into smaller agricultural rural communities like ours. Quincy being kind of the urban center, if you will, of our rural area, you're probably going to see it there first, in Adams County being kind of the largest county in the area. But incentivizing it is definitely part of the solution, and it has to be. And, you know, to your specific example, you're right. If some builder builds a $300,000 home and they're going to make $50,000, $60,000 profit off of that, which is great and probably about what they should make, and for all the effort they put in, net-wise, they don't end up making that anyway. You know, that's kind of a gross profit. But if we could tailor land acquisition together, especially in some older neighborhoods and infill, and find a way to build, like you said, 3-4 houses in a row, well, that's the same net result for the builder. There's more materials in that and things, but that'll all flow as a ratio. That's one. Townhomes are becoming a very popular way to cluster housing together, because you're getting, for one common land area, you're getting your parking lots, your garbage disposal, you're under one kind of roof almost. And so there's some affordability of scale doing that. And then, of course, apartment houses. I was encouraged to see that there are some people jumping into some of that and looking at some of those designs. The other part of incentivizing, I guess this will run the risk of maybe angering a few people in town, but the other idea of incentivizing is we have to take down barriers to these housing developments getting built too. We've, as much as we like to say we're pro business and pro this and pro that, we've put up some pretty big barriers. You've seen some debate back and forth about residential sprinkler systems. You see how the city and the county somewhat is kind of Wild West a little bit, doesn't have as many codes, but we'll have to make sure that we're in line with incentivizing developers to do what they need to do. Otherwise, they're just going to run away from it, and that's not going to do anybody any good.
Well, yeah, because then if that opens it up that if the city's not going to accommodate, then it's like, okay, well, let's go to the county and build more subdivisions out there. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, obviously over the last few years, we've seen dozens of them pop up all around, especially in the Tri-Township area and such.
So. Yeah, we'll take the county taxes.
Well, sure, yeah.
Don't get me wrong about that. But as far as, you know, I often have to remind some people around me in the county government, never forget that every city of Quincy citizen is also an Adams County citizen. They're not wholly separate, right? And so we get the benefit of money towards county services from people's property values going up inside the city of Quincy too. And let's be honest, there's so much existing infrastructure inside the city. But we also need to look at areas like Liberty and Camp Point and Ursa and Mendon, and they have valuable infrastructure resources, and some of the things we've done with ARPA is to try and help that. If you look at what we did, it wasn't only like, hey, let's repair this old wastewater lagoon, or hey, let's repair this broken part of our water system. It was like, hey, if you matched our money with your money, could you get the improved system? Could you actually have some ability to expand? Because I think those are areas that people desire to live in. They like living in that rural environment, but still having some of the amenities. So we got to work on that, both those.
You talked about using existing structures, if you will. I know you were also involved in the land bank process. It's a project, it's a partnership with city, the county, Two Rivers and such. How does that come into play, and how can that be a tool to assist in this?
Yeah, so people hear the term land bank, and you know, I think it's always important to kind of make sure everyone has an understanding of that definition. We're not out there giving, we're not trying to compete with banks. We're not giving loans. The bank refers more to the amalgamation or the concentration of property, like, hey, we're banking this land together to find ways to repurpose it and put it out for a higher and better use. We started the Two Rivers Regional Land Bank. Right now it's a partnership with Adams County, City of Quincy, Morgan County, and Jacksonville actually jumped on right away, and they've been doing some great work, and they have all the same problems we have. And we're hoping that with our template and using our knowledge and trying to get, you know, just get forms together, get how do we go through the trustee situation, and what, you know, it involves interrupting some of the sales, some of the tax sales, you know, and that really is where the land bank idea came out of, which was tax sales have been around for a while now. You've got, you know, people get delinquent on their taxes, and then that comes up for a tax sale. Most people redeem, you know, they pay their bill late, or they pay off the person that bought the taxes. And it's a system that works, and at least the county and the city, you know, the taxing bodies get their money short term. But the long-term results aren't good, and they haven't been good since that system has started. And that system's about 3-4 decades old now, and it hasn't proven out to be the best solution, especially in higher concentration urban areas, because it perpetuates a cycle of dilapidation over time. You know, and in Illinois, the redemption period is total redemption period for the tax buyer to get the property is 3 years. Well, what we're seeing is we're seeing out-of-town buyers. We're seeing people do their own kind of land banking, which is banking together dilapidated properties, reselling that as an investment so people make interest off of almost like a mutual fund for bad properties. And they have no tie to Quincy. They do, several of them, I know from personal experience, people say, well, I got this property, could you manage it for me? And you know, you go take a picture of it, and it's basically fallen into the ground. They've never been to Quincy, they haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is see if the tax sale process is going to continue. It has to. It's a legal thing in Illinois, most states. It serves a very good purpose in its role. We're trying to, you know, add on to that, or maybe I would say, I guess, subtract some properties out of it that could come to better use and be developed and get into hands of people that would develop it. And then in some cases, like you talked about, just getting 5 or 6 lots together.
Yeah.
Because who's going to build on a very small lot in an older neighborhood and take that chance? So we need to figure out if there's a way to, you know, batch those things together. And we've had limited success so far. The learning curve is steep for this. I was surprised. I mean, when we got going, I thought we'd use other people's examples and kind of not reinvent the wheel. But the more you get into it, you realize that every area has its, although it's a universal problem, it's a specific issues in each area. And so we're trying really hard to educate ourselves. Where Jacksonville is really, of our land bank partners, I would say Jacksonville is leading and doing a very good job. And we're going to go over there soon and look at some of the ways that they've acquired property. There's a ton of different ways through abandonment, delinquent taxes. You know, people can gift you properties that maybe they inherited that they didn't want. And so that's kind of the idea of that, is to batch that together and see if it can be dispersed back out.
Not only with as far as the tax sale, if this possibly not taking the place of, but supplementing the tax sale in some way, also is that a way it could also supplement the fix and flatten program? Because the city has said numerous times, we don't want to be in the real estate business.
Yeah, sure.
Is this a way to get them out of it?
Yeah, to some degree. That, to be honest, a city, a county, a state will always be in the property business. There is no zero sum for that. As much as we as sitting board or council members would not like to would like to not have to deal with those problems, they're going to exist all the time because the system is set up that you are the acquirer of last resort, basically, right? So in the county's version, it's a county trustee. In the city's, it's usually through nuisance abatement that becomes so bad that then, you know, it becomes their problem. But we need to find a way as a county and a city to work better together on that. We've been working on that for a couple of years now. You know, the real world situation is something like this, is the property grows up, all the neighbors look at all the grass, and maybe there's rodents involved, and it's just looking horrible, it's dragging down their value. It's actually the city that's get called for all the nuisance,
sure,
but it's the county that is actually the trustee and the owner of a property at that point. So we've got to look to partnering more on that. I think all cities and counties could do better on that. And when we get that in step, we'll do better at probably getting to problems before they get that bad. And then to your question, yes, it can definitely resolve a lot of fix or flatten issues, but you have to be aware that you're going to have to get a little more aggressive up front about some of the problems, and it's either fix it now or it's going to be something that we're going to have to like take over from you. And that is a scary thing to say as a property owner. It's a scary thing to deal with. I'm not talking about going and taking people's properties that's functioning or that they're taking care of or any kind of mass eminent domain thing. I would never advocate for that, you know, for on a whole host of reasons. But there are issues where, you know, it's kind of that abandonment deal, and we're seeing more of that. It's growing. It's not going away. It's growing, and I think some of it is just people no longer want to be bothered with the you know, nuisance calls and things like
It's either abandonment or you're going to walk up on some property and somebody's going to be squatting in there.
Yeah, sure.
There's got to be a lot of that going on right
now.
Oh,
there is. And you know, if I sat here and I said, oh, the numbers are bigger, I don't want to make that kind of claim, but we definitely see every year, especially as you go into wintertime and things like that. I mean, how many fires have we seen here lately? Yeah. You know, some are just accidents and those happen. And you know, I've got my own water leak problems going on after this weekend.
Frozen pipes.
Yeah, and we take care of our properties and you know, and stuff does happen. But I can tell you that I over my property career, I have seen an increase in that. I feel an increase in our area, seeing more of the properties be abandoned, which leads to these kind of fires and problems and, you know, having to be demolished. And, you know, I think if some of those properties, if their condition could be interrupted quicker, then you might have a chance. All that being said, some should just go. Some should be flattened, and maybe the fix or flatten program becomes an introduction chapter to an eventual land bank solution, and those work together better too. That's something that we still need to learn as we go.
Because there's been so many cases where the property gets flattened and it's still just flat. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
So if you have them, you know, two, like you said, two or three in a row, and you get somebody coming, hey, let's, you know, and I know that in some cases, you know, back when they were building the tiny homes and some of that stuff has happened, Habitat has done some of that stuff, but still to get it on a larger scale where we're really going to help solve a problem where we have a shortage of mid-range housing, something like that's really got to happen, where you can coordinate that effort and say, okay, we've got these four addresses right in a row, they're all cleaned out, we can build a couple of decent houses here, great, there's two more families.
Yeah, you know, the inherent flaw in the fix or flatten program, it's nobody's fault, it's just the inherent flaw is that when you get to that point, you have zero leverage left as a city or a county. Right. You have no leverage over the owner to do anything. You've paid for all the nuisance abatement. You put a lien on the property. You've now unfortunately, you have the property. The worst thing could have happened is you got the property, and now you're the one taking care of it as a municipality or as a county. And so the idea is to, you know, if that person really doesn't want anything to do with the property, why go through all those cycles? Let's just leverage that authority earlier and go, yeah, you really don't want it? Just gift it off to the county then. Let's not go through all this. And maybe it's a house that still could do with a roof and some windows and come back into the neighborhood. Most times it's probably going to be something that is in a little worse shape than that and probably will need to come down. But at least if you're getting involved early, you could say, man, wouldn't it be great if, you know, we could get these next two properties next to this lot that we already got. And you can approach those people. And they might be willing and say, thanks for coming. I've been thinking about this. You know, I inherited this from my grandparents who passed away, and I don't want anything to do with it. I don't live in Quincy. We have so many absentee landlords in this area. It's just unfortunate that I don't know if we're a higher or lower percentage than other areas, but it's a high percentage regardless, and that's a problem. So those things got to come together and work together.
Maybe we can find out for sure with the housing study.
Yeah. One of the things about, you know, there's several things about the housing study, and I understand people's reluctance, like, oh, good, we'll get another binder with some info in it, stick it on a shelf, and it collects dust. This is not going to be that. I absolutely can make the promise that this is not going to be like that. And a lot of the recent studies we've done haven't been like that. They are active, and we're tweaking them all the time. Like, just with the Illinois 57 thing, I was just involved in a meeting with that, and that is a live document, and I really like the way they're doing that. There's some things that we could emulate in that in the housing study to get people more engaged in the making of the cake rather than just showing them the baked cake at the end, you know, and I definitely want to see our citizens involved in that process. Interesting on the housing study, what can come out of that is not only, hey, we need this type of housing or that type of housing, it becomes a methodology to track your data too. And that's why we wanted to do it through this grant, through DCEO, as working together, because it can actually act as a receipt for us to go and apply for larger dollars inside their program. If we did a housing study just to ourselves, first of all, there's a good chance you're going to get a pretty biased opinion out of it, because we're all here, right? And we think we know what we need, and then sometimes we get surprised. Sometimes you're right, but sometimes you get surprised. But by having some outside consultants help with it, it takes away a little bit of the bias, but it also brings in some ideas of, like, this isn't just a static document that said, hey, on X date you needed 32 new houses in this range and 10 townhouses. This is a living document that says, here's how you track your data from here on out, using our GIS system, using people's transfer records. We're even doing, you know, this one caught me a little off guard, but when you think about it, it's pretty interesting. We're going to use the batch mail postal system to look at addresses that haven't received any mail in 2 years.
Wow.
Because if you haven't received any junk mail in 2 years, you know, they can find you anywhere, right? So if you haven't gotten an AARP letter in 2 years at a property, they can find you anywhere. Let's take that data and overlay it with what we already know is probably a problem property and go, and then you can look at, like, has there not been water hooked up to that property? You start to cross-reference four or five layers, and then all of a sudden, rather than a needle in a haystack, these things start jumping out at you. Out-of-town owner, delinquent on taxes, no water connection, hasn't had any mail delivered. We'll just go there and drive to it, and let's investigate that right away, and then we can target things.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to talking to you and Kyle Moore a little later on then and see how the study progresses. And hopefully all the people that we hope are coming to town will have some nice places to live, and we'll be able to take care of some other business too.
Yeah, I hope so too. I mean, this is an effort that could have a long-range success for Quincy. And thanks for having me and giving a little time to the issue.
Appreciate it. No problem, Brad.
Yeah, thanks.
That's all the time we have for now. I'm Bob Goff. We'll see you next week.